This is BI Radio.
I'm like, I'm a wreck. It's coffee-induced, kind of. But I'm like, am I okay? Why, what, is this on?
Hello.
Okay. I'm nervous.
Hi, I'm Kelsey.
Okay, now where's which one is the volume for me? My headphones? We ready? Oh, there we go. All right, in three. Three, two, one. Hi, I'm Delaney. Sorry, I'll do that again.
Hi, I'm Don Campbell, Vice President of Platform Strategy and Technology.
And I'm Andrew Campbell, Product Manager.
I'm Stefan Ju, Technical Architect.
You're not even in it.
You're
I think that'll flow just fine.
Fix it in post.
Yep.
That's what we always say.
Okay, we'll just try that
one more time.
I'm still just not sure how I'm going to start things off.
You know what? I'm freaked out of now, so I'm kind of doing it. Let me just take. I'll take a spin. I think we can get it
first
going.
Happens.
So I'll just read the intro here.
Hit a button over there.
Hi there, and welcome to BI Radio. I'm Ken Sealy. On the show today, a silver anniversary of sorts. 3 years and 25 episodes in, we look back, we look around, and we look ahead. Joining us in the studio for this special roundtable discussion, we have contributing producers Kelsey Howarth and Delaney Turner. From our technology soup panel, Don Campbell and Andrew Cowell. And finally, the voice of our commercial segments, Justine Kerr. Thanks everyone for joining us today. Now, why don't we start off about the show? How do we actually come up with some of the themes and ideas that we brought to our public here?
Each show, we try and break it into three different themes. Something that we think is going to be of general interest to everyone. A segment from a business author, an analyst, some of the big thinkers. We then like to, you know, have our own people participate in TechSoup. Some of our industry directors, some of our marketing people, and then we really love to have a customer participate. The themes kind of dictate themselves, but we want to make sure that people hear from not just us, but people outside of our organization.
Yeah, the performance management story is such a multifaceted, multidimensional story that you can come at it from a bunch of different ways. You can come at it from a product and various different products. You can come at it from an ideas. You can come at it from business value. You can let the customers tell them to talk to themselves or tell their own stories. And there's a lot of that content out there. And what we try to do is find a unifying principle among all the different assets that we have. And as Kelsey said, sometimes the themes express themselves, and other times we pick we find something that's in the news and something that the customers are talking about, and those two things come together.
For me as a writer, it's always a unique thrill to reach out to these business authors and ask them about their work. There's so many good segments, but I've had to pick two that really stuck out in my mind over the last 3 years. I would probably pick the one with Dr. Martha Rogers. She was talking about the Tylenol bottle tampering scandal of many years ago, but she was talking about how the company pulled every single bottle of Tylenol off the shelves immediately and took a huge financial hit.
Now, they could have said, look, it's not our fault. The drugstore should go check, see if things have been tampered with, and, you know, good luck. But instead, they made the decision to do the right thing.
Another segment that I really, really has had a big impact on my life was with Dan Gardner, who wrote a book about risk.
Mm-hmm. I can't emphasize strongly enough how profoundly grateful we should be that, you know, we are at risk, of course. We have serious dangers. There are things that we should worry about, certainly. But at the same time, we should realize how much lower the risks we face are today, and how much greater our life expectancy is, how much safer our children are, and we should be profoundly grateful for that.
That was a very powerful and emotional message.
Happy.
Sorry.
Well, that's
okay. Yeah. But on the upside, you know, we also have some great friends of the show and people like Patrick Lencioni and Mark Jeffries. Please, if you have a chance, listen to their segments. They're just charming and hilarious and insightful, and they both bring a very powerful message.
Mm-hmm. We do have to put on our corporate hats, and we do. It is a labor of love. Derek and I both have backgrounds in media and news, and I get to pretend that I'm still a news reporter, and that's a lot of fun. But you know, we do make sure that we are wearing the hat, and we talk about the themes that we pick and the people that we interview. We try to get across the core theme and the core brand story about better decision making and how people use information. And in the case of Dan Gardner, it was about looking at just the statistics about risk and actual
real
risk versus perceived risk, and looking at the actual data.
Well, there's a few others that lead right at Patrick Lencioni wrote a book called The Three Signs You Have a Miserable Job. And the three signs are you're anonymous, you're irrelevant, and you're immeasurable. So it led into our message of measuring what matters. It was really quite perfect. Mm-hmm. Stephen Dubner is another person that really looks at actual statistics aside from what the media does with it. And again, comes back to our message of finding the sweet spots of information.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you talk about wearing your corporate hats, and we're here, I look back at the technology suit panel, because primarily that podcast was an internal podcast that you know, your audience was certainly Cognos or / IBMers at that time, right? Yeah. So now,
smelly geeks.
You know,
smelly geeks.
Being a part of BI Radio, which we have a much larger external audience, how has that changed, you know, that particular panel?
I think there is an unserved population of enterprise viewers.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of podcast casting out there around technology, but it's for consumers and, you know, and specific interests around mobility or, you know, photography or whatever you have.
Yeah.
But to be able to talk about something that's relevant to a corporate enterprise or technology that's interesting to corporate enterprise, I think that's still a focus for us. And that's the person in my mind that I'm really speaking to is not just the typical consumer, but somebody that lives and works in an enterprise and needs to understand this technology just like the rest of us.
Knowledge worker whose job depends on quality IT and needs to understand the trends in that.
A lot of the business authors that we talk to have experience or have new ideas in that, and we like to bring that perspective to the readers. And if we can match, or the listeners, and if we can match the big idea people, we call the gurus and fun stuff. I'm just looking at the big wall of ideas, and we put those under the gurus category. If we can find the best shows, I think, are the ones that take the authors with the big ideas with the customers who are doing them, then the listeners and the customers get something out of it that said it's not just an abstract idea. There are actually people who are doing it. And that's when, you know, when people get out of the podcast. It's a fun listen, we hope, and it's something that they can actually go, oh, okay.
People respond to stories, and the abstract might be interesting, but it doesn't really feel real until you hear about people who've gone through it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it certainly sounds like it's still very, the podcasting way is still a very viable way to reach our business users right now. You know, looking back, can we share any memorable moments that we've had in the last 3 years? You know, those really good lessons that we've seen along, even sharing from our customers' experiences.
We had to get a bell. Somebody sent us a bell, remember?
Yes.
For the politically incorrect moments that Andrew would offer the show. And yes, so that we could mark those very specifically.
We should get just an outtake of all of the bell ringing.
Oh, man, just one long
sounds
beep.
Like the Church of St. Mary after a while.
You could do an entire episode, let alone segment of me saying, sorry, I'll do that again. Or just, I flub my intros. I never do the intros until afterwards, because there's an initial 30 seconds where I get over that adrenaline rush of being in a studio again.
And then it's
okay. Then I'm like, yep, that's fine. But so.
Yeah, I think for me it would be the giggling. I am not a giggler. I don't do it in any other area of my life, but when I'm talking to one of these authors, I get all nervous. And it's there. No other place in the world do I giggle except taped on the show.
Yeah, so, but then you know they tell two friends and they're giggling, yeah, and then the whole booth is going.
Yeah, really, it's contagious. I think, yeah, it just sounds silly.
What have been some of the things that you've been able to share that you found that literally helped people?
Well, podcasting,
mm-hmm, yeah,
has been, you know, really risen as a form of communication. And internally, when we release a Technology Soup podcast, it gets the kind of listenership that other PR and marketing would just, you know, dream about having. Mm-hmm. And it just seems to be something that reaches people, a certain class of people, and you know, the people want to sit there and do something else but just listen to information coming at them. This is a wonderful way of doing it. And it doesn't have to be overproduced, and it doesn't have to cost a lot of money, and you can do it, you know, on the fly with some Skunk Works talent, and it works very well. And so I've really seen that taken off as a form of communication.
The technology is really very simple. It's an MP3 file with an RSS feed, and that's essentially it, but there's a behavior and a new discipline around it. You say it is a legitimate form of communication with very simple technologies.
I think as well, when I think about this show, I'm going to go back to where we started with podcasting. It was an idea we were very intrigued with. Our group, the writing team, was approached to write 5 white papers. White papers take forever. You have to interview the subject matter expert, do drafts, research, approvals, art room, posting.
It very was high touch.
Yeah, it was going to take us about 6 months, and in the world of technology, that is unacceptable. So we pursued podcasts as a way to get our message out quickly, let the subject matter experts tell their own story, not have us tell them for it. And I think we were done all 5 in a month. It was really a tremendous first experience with them.
Well, I think, too, we've seen BI Radio legitimized by the numbers that we get in terms of downloads and subscribers. But if I just look at that on the iTunes store, the number and variety of podcasts on every conceivable discipline, from the, you know, from the DIY to the Harvard Business Review, everything and every possible interest is there, and it's only growing. So I think it meets that on demand, if everybody expects from their content, they want it when they want it. And it's also portable. So, I mean, it just fits so many of the different demands and expectations that people have.
We talked a little bit about, you know, how the show is run as far as the theme and the ideas. What about, the difficulties of finding our customers or even our own IBMers to come and have those conversations, some of the authors around there? What is that task like?
That's a lot of fun. It's probably the easiest part, actually. Kelsey's got more experience in this domain than I do. So
the really amazing thing, we've had a number of serious business authors, bestsellers, and we've just reached out to them, asked them to participate in the show at no cost. And they are incredibly giving. They're happy to share. Mm-hmm. It's a great vehicle for them as well to promote their efforts, their speaking. We have been very, very fortunate with the business authors. Our customers also are very, very, they want to share their successes as well. So it's been really, really nice.
Yeah, we've been blessed. We're generally talking to people who aren't shy about their ideas. And when we approach them and say, here's a vehicle to reach an audience for a very small, half an hour, 45 minutes on the phone, and we will look after everything and give you some free publicity, they're generally very, very happy to help.
On a slight tangent, I have seen that the technology does enable people to connect in ways you probably wouldn't have expected. Mm-hmm. I, for example, was recently having an argument with somebody over the H1N1 vaccine, and they said, well, there's a study that showed that it was inconclusive, that it wasn't doing anything. So I actually looked at the study and saw the author and thought, I'll just ping the author. And so I just, there was the email address. I emailed the author and said, did you mean this? And she immediately replies, no, that person you're talking to is wrong, and this is why. Bang, bang, bang. And it was like that scene in Annie Hall where the guy pulls over Marshall McLuhan and says, you know what, you're full of crap, and here's Marshall McLuhan, and he'll tell you why.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful that way, to be able to actually go and find people.
So maybe real life is like this finally.
So that's kind of looking past, right? I mean, we've looked at some of the stuff that we've seen come to light within the last 3 years. Where are we going then? I mean, what kind of technology?
Flying cars, Ken.
Hey, I love it. Can I get one now?
Rocket packs, rocket packs.
You know, but what is going to help? What's going to propel our businesses in the future, especially with that theme of technology? What is going to be put in there? And then in the near future, let's not go off to rocket cars, man. Like, what's coming up soon?
What's going to be the next big thing? Is it going to be a device? Is it going to be a technology? Is it going to be an idea?
I think it's going to be an integration. I think it's going to be more like, it drives me nuts with personal productivity applications that phone numbers show up for calls that I have to make, and then I immediately have to read it off and type it into the phone that's beside me. Mm. This thing should basically call for me and ring and say, "You're now on your call, pick up the handset." Mm. You know, that type of thing should be going on, and I think that we're moving more and more in that direction.
There's still too many disconnects between the applications that we use on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And having me be able to do something that's work-centric rather than tool-centric is really the, you know, design goal of the future. Let me be able to take this task and accomplish it. And frankly, I don't care what the tools are that may help me to accomplish it. And I don't want to see splash screens, and I don't want to, you know, to know that I've got different tools and different interfaces. I want to work the way I want to work, and I want the information to sort of appear into my world and integrate the way that I've customized it to look. And they just, some of them are coming from, you know, search, and some of them are coming from the fact that I'm geospatially located in a certain, you know, spot in town, and they're coming from different IT systems, and they're coming from colleagues and all of that, but it's all coming together in a way that is just letting me progress on the task that I have, rather than saying I'm going to stop doing that and I'm going to do a little bit of this and I'm going to go back to that again because my tool forces me to.
Yeah, the best tools are the ones, or the applications are the ones that fall away, that you don't even know you're using after a while.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, maybe cloud's going to be a part of that. You know, if we can standardize on applications on the cloud and some interfaces around integrating them, maybe that's a, you know, that's a good design for the future, is to allow us to be able to do it all off-site rather than on the fact that I happen to have this tool on my desktop right now, and if I go to Andrew's office, he doesn't have that tool on his desktop, so we can't do, you know, do the same task.
So, sorry, just really building in that trust figure, like you're saying as well, you know, IT has got to start trusting that some of the social contribution is going to be there and be at least accepted. We have to start trusting that the technology, no matter where it's housed, is going to be available, be secure, and be really there when we need it to have that information. So that trust level has to be built as well.
Well, borrowing from Don Tapscott, and I fully believe it, part of the shift is going to be demographic. Mm-hmm. Just like people of my age tend to point at things and dial things using my finger, and kids that grew up with Nintendo use their thumb. People of my age are digital immigrants. I mean, I grew up with rotary phones, and my kids laugh when they see them. And,
I love rotary phones.
Rotary phones are beautiful. They're wonderful things. But now we have kids that, you know, when you try to talk to them about technology, cell phones, the internet, it's like talking to a goldfish about water. Like, mm-hmm. What? Yeah, of course. And this stuff should follow you. And, you know, the cell phone is simply your portal into just another aspect of your life. Right. Everything's on the cloud. And, you know, I try to push that way. I still have my rotary phone mentality in a lot of ways. But, you know, most of all my personal email, my personal calendar, my to-do lists, all that information for me is on the cloud right now. So wherever I go, I've got my phone with me. I can access it all, my contacts, everything, wherever I go. And I think that type of approach, simply because the digital natives that are now growing up and entering the workforce, is going to be a huge push.
Oh, you can remember a time when it didn't exist.
Right? Yes,
it used to be for, you know, programming the VCR for our parents was like that, the blinking 12 o'clock. And for me now, you talk about the Nintendos. For me, the technology break was the new controller with the thumbs. I can't get my head around it. I grew up with a joystick.
Yeah.
And I just think in technology there are certain breakpoints that indicate a new generation is, you know, out of the way, you know, it's coming. I still can't get over those things.
No, me either.
Forget it, you know.
What helps our customers hearing this? Is it something that you're using because they're using it, or is it something to show some of the newer technologies that people are interested in using?
Well, our customers are at various levels in their technology adoption. Some of them are really just struggling and trying to sort of maintain the systems that they've got and you know, keep them effective for their business. And others are looking at technology as a competitive differentiator. And so they want to know, what's that leading thing? What's something that might give me that leg up on the competition that I can adopt next year? And we try and give them a little bit of that insight so that they can see how to maybe get ahead in the years to come.
Well, so looking back in these last, you know, 3 years as far as the show's been on, what are some of those business and technology changes that we've seen along the way?
I think mobility is possibly one of the biggest stories of the last 3 years.
The explosion in mobility, for sure.
Yeah. Everything from BI on a BlackBerry to just expanding it to almost everything being able to do on a mobile device.
Yeah. Well, you know, also the consumerization of IT.
Yeah.
Mobility is part of that.
Yeah.
So we all carry our phones around, and we get more and more technology in those phones and can do more with them, and we want to bring that technology into the business. But we see it in other things as well, too. Search, for instance, and look at how important a search engine is to you in finding information on the internet, bringing that into the business and now having enterprise-level search where you can get at the real business content and find a place to make that decision. Those kind of technologies are really making their way, I think, from the consumer space.
And yes, most recently, I would also argue that cloud has probably been that consumerization trend that's starting to really impact enterprises. People are seeing advantages in that approach and wondering how they can translate that to business success as well.
Is, when you talk about the consumerization of corporate IT, and is the inroads of consumer tech and the behaviors around that, is that because of the impact or the new ability for people to work anywhere, the blurring of home and work? I'm thinking if you're using consumer technologies at home and you're working at home, you just expect applications, regardless of how they are, to work a certain way.
Right. I would say it's a combination of a number of things. One is, the best technology I ever had access to used to be in the office because I couldn't afford that at home.
Right.
Now it's very inexpensive, and so I have great technology at home as well, too.
Right.
Kids have grown up with this kind of technology, are now coming into the workplace, so there's a little bit, you know, a change of expectation there as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
Plus the fact that often your office is at home, and as you were saying. And so it's a combination of all of those things where I don't want such a dramatic change from the tools and the technologies I access at home to the tools and technologies I access in the workplace. I want to be able to put those two things together. And the things that I like at home, I like to go in and get my, you know, my maps and find my directions to places. Well, why can't I find a direction to the, you know, the next place to put my store? So you really want to, you know, to bring those two things together, and there isn't such a dramatic change between work and office and home anymore.
I find the translation, though, of consumer technology to be, I mean, who was the futurist that said that the future's here already? It's just not evenly distributed. And I think that technology, consumer technology is like that, and some of it will never make it, at least in a form that we recognize the consumer world, into the corporate world. So search was a good example. Search on the internet is frankly different than search behind the firewall. You go to an application and it doesn't have search, you can't say, well, this sucks, I have to go to the next application. You're kind of stuck with that app, usually, because it's doing the thing that you need it to do. And although they're getting better, even the types of data that you're looking for and so on, it's a different paradigm. It's narrow but deep as opposed to wide and shallow like the internet. And so it's going to be a bit of a different experience. However, search is progressing to be optimized. And so, well, now you can search and create content, which you don't really do so much on the internet, but now you can do that behind the firewall. So new opportunities come out. Mobility, I think, maps fairly well, but some stuff still needs to find its footing, like social media, social interaction. You know, people want to see Facebook behind the firewall, and is that really happening? I haven't really seen anything compelling yet.
Well, I think that's one of the things that's going to change, though, as we get used to Flickr and Facebook and YouTube and all these places where I can contribute content into the site. Now I come into my workplace, and I know why, you know, there was an issue in our lab last month. And so I want to be able to contribute that back into the intelligence system of the enterprise. And years ago, I don't think people were very comfortable with having information in the corporate IT world that wasn't just owned and fenced off by IT. And we have to become more comfortable with the fact that we aren't going to be able to trust absolutely every piece of information, but there's value there. When you look at something like Wikipedia, let's not ignore the value that it's got, even though you know you can't trust it at 100%. And I think that corporate decision-making culture is going to grow to the point where we add new content that comes from users that IT doesn't own and they can't validate, but there's still something in there they've got to learn to trust.
That's true, because you do see, it is, just to contradict myself, but there are tools that certainly are, as opposed to large applications, like wikis, for example, I find are more and more prevalent. Forums have sort of always, well, not always been there, but have always been a way of that sort of social interaction, but friending people. And even in the mobility world, who in the corporation actually uses SMS to send information around, right? There are differences in terms of applications of some of these tools that just don't apply to the enterprise, or at least we haven't found an application for them yet.
In some ways, I think that the enterprise not being as shallow and broad as you were describing before, right? The internet is like that. Mm-hmm. But it's narrower and deeper, and it's got all this rich metadata around it. And so when you are doing a search, you can, you know, take that ontology of the company and apply it to it and get much more valid results than you ever can just by looking at keywords like Google has to on the internet. Mm-hmm. And so in some ways, some of these technologies I think should be applied and be more effective in the enterprise than we could ever hope for them to be in, you know, this broad, disconnected world in the internet.
Justine, what do you get out of this?
Well, I'm part of that generation that was really born into most of the technology. So for me, it's almost taken for granted. So I have to admit that a lot of this, you just assume that it should have been that way. And I can't honestly know what it would be like without it. And I do have a lot of younger siblings, and they're more ahead than I am. And sometimes you just feel like you're not where you should be, considering you work in this industry. There's always new things, but it's hard to keep up.
It's incredibly eye-opening to, again, watch your children being teenager years blast through technology but parents taking a bit of adversity to try to figure out why or should I, or there's just that wall that it's hard to break sometimes. You know, like you just take it for granted. It makes sense. If my commercial life or my consumerism life is easy and I have all these gadgets and widgets and devices in order to make my life easy, why don't I have that at my work to make that same experience better for my employer, to make my end of day more productive for my boss? Well, that's a wrap. I'd like to thank our guests today, contributing producers Kelsey Howarth and Delaney Turner, our Technology Soup panelists, Don Campbell and Andrew Cowell, and last but not least, Justin Carroll. Finally, thanks as well to our head producer, composer, and audio engineer, Derek Schrainer. A reminder to check us out online at radiocognos.com or our new home at ibm.com/cognos. Where you can listen to previous shows, download individual segments, and view the transcript of each broadcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/IBMCognos or email us at biradio@ca.ibm.com. I thank you for listening. I'm Ken Seeley. We'll see you in about 6 weeks.
I would say learning Ken Seeley's broadcast voice has been probably the highlight of my experience. He's sort of taking a little bit of Howard Stern and combining it with a bit of, who's that old guy on 60 Minutes? Yeah, Mickey Rooney.
Mickey Rooney. Why do you park in a driveway?
But you drive in a parkway.
That's good. Thanks, man. And that's a good one or a bad one?
That's a good
one. Okay.
Yeah. I got a little bit of William Shatner in there. With pauses. It's important to set up a certain dramatic pause.
That's good. Thanks, man.
What was the question, Kevin?
Become a BI champion with the IBM Cognos Champions Kit. Discover how to increase the ROI of your investment, gain visibility for results, and increase your own profile within your organization. you'll find resources for every phase of your deployment, from setting strategy to driving adoption. Find out more online at ibm.com/cognos/champion. Interviews, insights, and opinions on performance management. You're listening to BI Radio.